This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Michelle Martin is away. Now it's time for the weekly visit to the barbershop. That's when the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are writer and cultural critic Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, John Hopkins University political science professor Lester Spence, and Michael Steele, the former lieutenant governor of Maryland and the former chair of the Republican National Committee. We have a full studio today. Everyone's here in Washington, D.C. Llévatelo. Take it away, Jimmy.
Maria.
Oh,
Maria.
Yeah.
Welcome to the shop. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulosa. Yeah.
Word to Michael Jackson. Hey. Welcome to the shop, fellas. What's good?
Hey, what's cracking?
It's all good, man. It's all good.
All right. Well, you know what? Vice President Joe Biden doesn't have his foot in his mouth lately. He's actually, you know, been keeping himself busy otherwise. He stopped by the National Council of Lhasa convention this week, and yesterday he went to the NAACP convention in Houston. Maria, we got some tape of that, yeah?
Oh, yeah, we do. Here you go, Jimmy. Here's Vice President Biden speaking at the NAACP.
I believe this election will come down to character, conviction, and vision. And it will not surprise you, I don't think it's even a close call.
Wow. Thanks, Maria. Kind of a locker room moment. He seems to be pumping up the team.
You know, he was met with a lot of applause at the NAACP convention. But when Republican candidate Mitt Romney spoke, he had a different kind of reaction on Wednesday. Here's a clip.
We have to stop spending over $1 trillion more than we take in every year. And so to do that, I'm going to eliminate every non-essential expensive program I can find. That includes Obamacare, and I'm going to work to reform and save.
Wow. Thanks for that, Marie. You know what? You know what? I think it was courageous that homeboy went to Romney went to see the NAACP, yeah? But, see, the thing about dude is that, you know, I don't think it's a color thing with him. I think it's a class thing. I think he doesn't necessarily know how to talk to people that, you know, don't shop at Nordstrom's or below his caste, you know. And I think, like many white Americans, he presumes that people of color, all automatically, he sees brown faces and he presumes that they're not his kind or caste. And he begins stumbling over words. And, you know, he should have nuanced his comments about Obama, if only just for appearance's sake. And I think these rhetorical gifts elude him when it comes to talking, you know, to regular folk. Michael Steele, earlier this week, you were quoted in the Man of Steel. You were quoted in an article in Luke 21. You said Mitt Romney speaking at the NAACP was a moot point. Tell us what you meant.
Well, it's a moot point simply because this is 5 months before a general election, and the idea of going into the NAACP with any hope of getting the black vote this fall is ludicrous, given that the RNC and national political party figures have done very little, if anything, over the last 2 years to warrant and to earn that vote. I applaud the governor for going. I think you do need to be mindful of whose house you're in and what you say about the folks who belong in that house, which Barack Obama is a member of that house, if you will. But I also recognize, and I do note from the clip, that when he said, we've got to stop the spending, we've got to cut the spending and save, he got the applause until he started talking about what he was going to cut. And the people were like, wait, hold up, you're not going to cut that. So that, to me, sort of sets the argument and the tone for this fall's elections as well.
Doc?
You know, a couple of points. One is, it's interesting that you bring that up, because usually people in general, Americans in general, they want cuts except when it's the stuff they like, right?
So that's
something that's really important to understand. The second thing, I'd actually disagree. I don't think it's a moot point, but what we have to understand is Romney isn't speaking to the NAACP to speak to black voters. What he's doing with that moment is he's speaking at the NAACP in order to talk to white moderates and show that the face of the Republican Party can be a bit kinder and gentler than it actually has been over the past couple of years.
And is that good politics? Is that cynical? Is it, you know, does it work?
It's both. It's both cynical and good politics.
Lester Spence, thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, the data shows there's research out of Michigan that was conducted when Obama's predecessor was in office that it actually does work, that particularly among, I believe, white, moderate women, they're far more likely to express support for the candidate when he shows himself open to diversity.
Arsalan Iftikhar.
Well, you know, I would actually take it one step further and say that not only was he speaking to, you know, white, moderate, independent voters, but he was also trying to speak to white, conservative, Republican base. You know, I think, you know, going into the NAACP and saying that you want to repeal Obamacare, you know, nobody can be surprised that you'd get booed. It's like me going to a Tea Party convention and saying that President Obama was born in America.
Or like going to somebody's house for dinner and saying your mama can't cook. I mean, it's just rude. Right. It's just rude.
Right.
I think a lot of it was
dog whistle politics to, you know, try to get some more street cred from a lot of the conservative base that's not very enthused about him.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and you're listening to the weekly Barbershop Roundtable. It's my first time here, and I'm loving it. We're joined by writer Jimmy Israel. And civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, political science professor Lester Spence, and former chair of the RNC Michael Steele. Para ti, Jimmy.
Ah, the most beautiful sound. Thank you, Maria. All right, well, meanwhile, back in D.C., members of both political parties were asking, where in the world is Jesse Jackson Jr.? The Chicago congressman's office has said he's been out on medical leave since June 10th. Rumors are running rampant, but Wednesday night, the public got some answers, yeah?
A new statement from his office read, quote, the congressman is receiving intensive medical treatment at a residential treatment facility for a mood disorder. He's responding positively to treatment and is expected to make a full recovery.
Now, you know what? For some people, that statement presents more questions than answers. Critics and constituents are asking for more information, saying the public has a right to know what's going on. But others say it's a medical health issue and Jackson's privacy should be respected. A-Train, Arsalan Iftikhar, you hail from Chicago, the land of the flying bullet. Weigh in here.
Well, you know, I think that this is really a tough one. I think that, you know, when you hear recent statements by Chicago Congressman Luis Gutierrez and even Illinois Senator Dick Durbin saying that, you know, Jackson's office should come out with more information. It has to do with his constituency. I think that, you know, he won the Democratic primary in his district, which is, you know, heavily Democratic. But, you know, with the general election coming up, I think a lot of people in Chicago, especially in his district, want to know, you know, the extent of his medical leave. He's been gone from Congress for almost 2 months since May. And so I think that these are questions that are going to need to be answered.
Man of Steel, Michael.
I agree, and I take a slightly different view of it as a former elected official and someone who's been under that glass of scrutiny for some time. You do have to recognize that zone, and it sounds like there's something serious going on with him, and I would prefer that he get that right with himself and his family before he has to showboat and showcase to the rest of us what his deal is, and I think there's time for that. I agree with Arsalan's point about the upcoming election, but I don't think that's really going to be an issue for him in Chicago this November in terms of reelection. So I want to see the brother get healed. I have an immense amount of respect for him. I've enjoyed working with him in the past. I've, you know, loved working with his dad, and I think let him work that out and then come back, and then we can pick up the pieces.
Lester Spence.
So his voting record has been impeccable, right? So that's it's important to understand that. So it's not like because he's got this long history of actually doing his job, I think people are going to give him the space he needs. But this is an opportunity. Mental health is actually a public health problem. Mood disorders, rates of mood disorders among African Americans are about the same, but they're consistently misdiagnosed among blacks. Blacks are far less likely to receive treatment for mental health issues than other populations. I think this represents an excellent opportunity to put this back on the radar, because there are a number of people. I myself haven't suffered from mood disorders, but I've suffered from depression, and it's literally no joke. I think that the more public figures that wrestle with this, particularly political figures like Jackson, given his constituency, the better. And I'm hoping
depression among Latinos, the same thing, and no one is talking about it. And if you can't talk about it, then how do we move on? But so it's a question about
the
silence.
I think it's good for him to start to heal himself before he starts to talk about it, though. I don't want to see him rushed into having to explain stuff.
No, that's right.
Yeah, if I were Jesse Jackson Jr., I'd need a vacation, too. You know, my dad's just a regular working guy, but I feel the pressure of having to live up to him, to his what he set before me, and try to make him proud. You know, and it's a lot of pressure. And nobody's talking about that. I mean, you know, MLK III, he keeps a low profile, and he should. You know, because it's like being Superman Jr. It's everybody has all these expectations, and when you're in the shadow of a great man, it's difficult. You
why
know?
Don't you wear so your cape the same way he did, right?
Right.
You guys, let's turn this all around now and talk about a topic that really just is so hard for all of us. But let's talk about what happened with Penn State.
Oh my gosh. Well, this is awful, because we all know the result of the Penn State investigation into Jerry Sandusky's sexual abuse scandal. The university hired FBI director Louis Freeh to examine how the school—
Former FBI director.
Former. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
How the school handled the situation. And the conclusion was ugly. We got a clip from Freeh's press conference on Thursday.
Our most saddening and sobering finding is the total disregard for the safety and welfare of Sandusky's child victims by the most senior leaders at Penn State.
Wow. You know, Michael Steele, it kind of evokes their reaction, kind of like a HUD reaction, not because it's funny, but because it's so ridiculous that we live in a country that put the welfare of young children to the side for the sake of football. And it just blows my mind.
Oh, it blows mine, too. And I've said from the very beginning of this scandal that the program should be shut down for at least a year. There should be a thorough and full investigation to see exactly the extent. Were there any other students who may have been harmed in some way, you know, young freshmen or whatever, just to clear the house there completely, because this is reprehensible beyond words.
Well, yeah, and this is Arsalan, you know, as somebody who went through the entire 267-page free report, you know, obviously, you know, we knew a lot of the stuff that was in there, but we also learned a lot of the stuff that, you know, new stuff. And what's interesting to me and the discussion that's been going on in sports talk radio is, you know, should the statue of Joe Paterno be taken down at Penn State?
Absolutely.
And I agree with that. I think it should be taken down. I think, you know, for anybody who's a Joe Paterno fan, you might want to take your picture against that statue, because it's not going to be there long. Even Nike, you know, recently, a day or so ago, removed Joe Paterno's name from a center that they had. And it's really going to be interesting, because the Clery Act, it's a federal law which basically requires that if there's any criminal acts on university campuses to be reported, to see if there's going to be any sort of grand jury indictments moving forward in the future against three out of the four people that were implicated in the Freeh report.
Lester Spence?
Penn State's one of the top five, has one of the top five most profitable football programs in the nation. I think the best idea I heard was that they take that revenue and just put that totally into dealing with kids' health to make sure something like this doesn't happen again. But one thing I like to emphasize, this is what evil looks like, right?
We tend to put
evil on people like the KKK or the Nazis, but no, it's this is what it looks like.
When it's just everywhere and everyone's pretending like they don't see it?
Yes, and then it's wrapped up. There's all this other good stuff that comes. This is what it looks like.
It's frightening.
This is what it looks like.
As a mom, it's entirely frightening, I have to tell you. As a mom of a 16-year-old, just entirely frightening. All right, gentlemen, there's one more topic I want to hear your thoughts on. Yes, the Olympic uniforms. The outfits for the opening ceremony are designed by Ralph Lauren, but made in China. So that's not sitting well with many critics. So, guys, Jimmy, do you think it matters that the uniforms were made overseas?
I challenge you right now to find something that you're wearing that isn't made overseas.
Man, everything I wear is from China. Everything I own is from China.
You know, the sandals I'm wearing were made in Israel. These Levi's were made overseas. I know this Hanes T-shirt wasn't made in Oklahoma. You know, so... Hey, I think it's a lot of political grandstanding.
A little jingoistic.
Yeah. I just think people just need something to talk about. They need their name in the paper, and you know they're trying to wave the flag around, which always works. You know, no disrespect to the flag, but it's just what's more American than wearing you know, clothes made overseas.
But what's so crazy is that Harry Reid, I mean, Harry Reid is sounding pretty radical. He's like, well, you know, put them all together and light them on fire.
He hasn't had his name in the news in a while, so now he has. He can go put this up on his refrigerator and say, look, Mom, look what I said.
Michael Steele, is this smart business, bad politics, or both?
It's bad business for Ralph Lauren right now. I think it's good politics for both the right and the left, who've actually found something in Washington to come together over. As we've seen the House and Senate leadership do. I happen to agree, though, that I think given how interconnected we are globally, to feign shock and dismay that, you know, this product or that product was made overseas is kind of silly. Although it's the Olympics, it's national pride and all of that, I still think it's a little bit overblown right now.
Arsalan.
Again, man, everything I own is made in China. I wouldn't be surprised if I was made in China.
then taken to Chicago.
Exactly.
You heard it here first.
I mean, this is one of those faux political controversies.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's like the recent, you know, House vote on repealing Obamacare. I mean, we have a lot of things that our House and Senate need to be focused on, and this sort of, you know, political circus and grandstanding is, you know, it gets my Redunculus Award of the Week.
Finally!
I know, right?
Yeah. Let your spins. Come on, man.
I'm rocking a summer scarf from Africa right now, so I don't even know.
And you are rocking it. You are rocking it.
Straight up.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are rocking with the best. Let's go.
this is what globalization looks like.
You're un-American. You know that, right?
But there is something to be said to focus on getting our manufacturing base back in place here. I've seen in my state of Maryland, go from 38% manufacturing base to 7% over the last 20 years. So there is a legitimate argument to make for U.S. manufacturers.
Sure.
But I don't think this is the way to do it.
All right, Agreed. Guys, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much for being on The Barbershop. Jimmy Israel is a writer and culture critic. He's also an adjunct professor in social media, of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College. Give me the pronunciation.
Cuyahoga. Try C?
You see? Lester Spence is a blogger and political science professor at Johns Hopkins University. Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, author and founder of TheMuslimGuide.com. And Michael Steele is a former chair of the Republican National Committee and a columnist for TheRoot.com. An online publication focusing on African-American experiences and ideas. All of the gentlemen were here with me in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much.
Peace.
And hey.
Thank you.
Peace.
Yep.
All right.
Till next time. That's our program for today. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin will be back to talk with you more on Monday. And muchas gracias. Ciao.